May what draws us together in community be the renewing challenge of the best we have and may be. May it be a call to generous action. May Unitarian Universalism guide us through the false promise of a culture which values gadgets and material wealth to values that help us give ourselves to serving more eagerly to what brings truth and joy into our lives. May our faith be the sorrow that opens for us the way of sympathy, forgiveness, understanding, and service to suffering humanity. May our religion be to us wonder and lure of what is only partly known and understood, the awe in our children, an eye that glories in nature, its rawness and its sweetness, and a heart that rejoices in deeds of kindness and courage. May our progressive call bring us serenity as it increases our capacity to take risks in a world made complacent with what greed offers. May hope and purpose encourage us to discover opportunities to express our best through daily tasks and acts. May Unitarian Universalism unite us with all that is noble in human beings everywhere, in every war-torn village and the towns and valleys of the deep red and tawny flanks of the Flint Hills. May we give ourselves anew to what holds us in love and makes us whole. Good morning. I'm Michael Nelson, the person blessed to be minister here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whether grand words inspire or you prefer short, simple statements, your voice is welcome here. Whether you find joy in philosophical discernment, holding a newborn, chopping wood, or playing bridge, we invite you to share your joy in this house of hope. Whatever you dedicate yourselves to, may it bring you into good balance with all of life. Whoever you are, whomever you love, may love be a presence in your lives that you share with all that you can. We welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I call your attention to the announcements in our order of service, and in addition to those, the children of William and Babette McGoy invite everyone for a reception celebrating their 50th anniversary to be held here at the Fellowship on Monday, December 26th from 9 to 11 in the morning. RSVPs are not required, but if you know you are coming and could let Molly know, it would be helpful with planning. So let Molly know if you can make it. Congratulations, Babette and Bob. And in addition to that announcement, we have another one. If you haven't been reading your newsletter carefully, which I know all of you do, you may have missed Who's the UU? And it can be found in our last three newsletters. It's a way to learn more about our community. Ask an 85-year-old about her days as a trapeze artist. The person who left her child and a husband when she was 18 to join the Air Force. A couple who got a piglet presented to them at their wedding. To try to figure out this mystery, Sybil has invented, as she told me this morning, invented this new ruse to get people involved and get one another to get connected in ways that may be a little hard to share, just like saying, did you know I was a trapeze artist? So in this next newsletter, in our group, we have a professional actress. Who is that? And there was a couple met when he delivered fresh farm eggs to the 4-H camp where she had a summer job teaching arts and crafts. So ask around, find out. Now let us stand as you are willing and able, and let us sing hymn number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Having talked to a number of people this past week, I know a number of you have been really sick, and some of you are really sick. Jennifer Bryan, who is to play violin this morning, has a high fever and can't be with us to share her beautiful music. And also, I regret to say that Owen Zeller has got a high fever, and Sloan is kind of in that range. So Sam, Owen, and Sloan Zeller will not be here for their child dedication this morning. But we have two others that have decided they want to be, or three others. We wish all of them well. And my partner Charles has got a migraine, started one of those kinds of crazy things. And with traumatic brain injury, it's good that he is paying attention and not letting it get worse, so that manic cycle stays small and returns back to normal. So if you have a joy or a concern that is of a personal nature, please share it now. We have a mic back there. And
I have a joy. I am holding a brand new talking stick. This is very important to Unitarians.
I'm Barbara Bascom. I have a joy and a sorrow. The joy is that the youngest of our mob is firmly in middle age and had a birthday on the 14th. This is Fritz. He's visited here. He lives in Aspen, Colorado. The sorrow is I heard on public radio this morning the death of Vaclav Pavel. And Pavel was such an inspiration to all of us who worked in Eastern Europe and the Balkans after the fall of communism. And he was such an inspiration to his people. His writings are wonderful, and I'm sorry to hear of his death.
Sybil Perkins. Remember when you were young, or those of you who are young remember, known right now, how exciting it is when you have a program at school and you know your parents are in the audience? Isn't that fun? I remember that when I was a kid, and I could always tell when my mom was in the audience because I recognized her when she blew her nose. I knew it was her. It was very distinctive. She must have done that just to toot a reminder to me, you know, to know that she was there. Anyway, I just want to thank all of you that came to the Harmony for the holidays last Sunday. When I looked out and saw familiar faces in the audience, you were my substitute family. That was nice. Thank you.
So for those joys and sorrows and the mix that have been shared, let us keep them in our heart, but along with those, let us keep those joys and sorrows that have not been shared. They are as important as those that have been, and we never know when people are carrying deep grief or great happiness. Oh, it usually shows. But anyway, let us be mindful. Will the children and parents who are here for the dedication please come forward, the child dedication? Surprises. This is a time in the life of our fellowship when we stop and we look at our young faces accompanied by their parents and grandparent. And if the other grandparent would like to, no, she's already done this, sorry. I'm off base. Anyway. We take time to remind ourselves that these lives are our future, and that's not something to be taken lightly. We should never take birth of a child for granted. It is a blessing. This morning, we, the friends and members of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, mindfully welcome Carrie and Lauren. Are they over there? There you are. Hi. And then we have Jocelyn. Hello, Jocelyn. And then we have Destiny. And then we have Ellie. Good morning. Am I missing anybody over there? All right. I'm glad. We welcome you into this faith community. The gift of a child bestows upon the parents, the extended family, and friends a sacred trust. While the parents guide the child throughout his or her life, family and community help guide the child toward his or her full development. We gather as family and community to honor this time set apart from the ordinary time for celebrating a time of witnessing and for making promises that Erica, Amy, Sarah, and Barbara, and Laura will help with their full development. Erica, Amy, Sarah, Corey, well, not Corey, you're over there, Sloan and Sam are home, okay. And everyone else up there, will you provide your children a home filled with love and care? If so, say we will. Will you expose your children to a wide variety of ideas, experiences, and people so that they develop open minds and accepting hearts? Will you teach with the strength of your convictions and encourage in your children the honest search for truth and appreciation of love and the dignity of others? Will you give your children the freedom to try and to fail? None of you are going to fail, right? All right, that's good. And will you give them the love and a sense of what paths are available to them? Will you have fun with them and learn from them? We will? We will, we will. And you out there, children need community. And as an important part of the wider community in this family, for this, these families, this congregation will contribute to their future in many ways. We each may serve as role models, and each may have something to teach them. Will you, as a community, commit to accept these children into your lives, to teach and to learn with them, and to surround them and their parents with the love and support they need? All right. Jocelyn. All right. Destiny. Carrie and Lauren and Helen and your parents and grandparents, thank you.
It's on? Oh, it is. Yeah, okay. Hello. I'll sit over here. You guys face out. They prefer looking at you than me. Okay, so a week from today, Santa comes. Who's excited? Woo! Who is super excited to get some presents? What are we hoping to get? What are we hoping to get? Hey, great. Awesome. You, Santa, nothing. Okay.
Julie, American Girl doll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A pink horse. A grown-up book.
Nice.
A Spinet watch.
A toy Rudolph.
Awesome. A Josephine American Girl doll.
Those are popular. Okay, Santa, listen. Okay, who, oh, you have one too? Okay.
An AT-AT.
Awesome. What is that?
It's from Star Wars.
Sweet. Okay, Who is excited to give presents? Okay. Who might be more excited to give than to receive? Okay. So talk me through this a little bit. How do you guys get your presents to give? You cannot drive, nor do you have a source of income. Okay. So what do you do?
You can make stuff.
Make stuff.
Make it out of clay?
Make it out of clay.
I usually make my things out of paper.
Paper.
Use things my mom never knew I had.
Awesome! You can make stuff. What is it? Oh, yes.
What did you say?
How do you get the gifts for people without a car or money?
I'm talking about making stuff. I usually make stuff out of whatever I want.
Anything in the house. Awesome. Yes.
I was going to make my mom a...
She's sitting right there. Do you want to say this? She's like, on the audience.
Well, I was going to. I made this deck of Go Fish cards, but I messed up, and so there's like this big scratch of black crayon on it.
I don't think you'll be getting that, Erica. It sounds like it's a no-go. It's a no-go. Okay, well, okay, surprise is out. Okay.
I use yarn. My mom taught me a lot.
Nice. So you can make things. So... Kaya, you're doing such an awesome job holding the box. Can you hold your box up? Your box up? Yeah. So one of the other people on our box that we haven't talked about yet, his name is Patrick, and he lives in Haiti. And he came from kind of a troubled neighborhood where they kind of got into fights a lot. And so he got really into art as a way of staying out of trouble. And he became a really great artist and did this after-school program with art. And what he found is that made him feel really good. When you guys make your presents, does it make you feel really good? Yeah, it's pretty awesome, right? So he found that really made him feel great, and so now he involves more kids in this after-school program, and they give their artwork to people or they sell it. So this is an awesome way of contributing, right? So yesterday at our cookie swap, we made some pretty awesome holiday cards. And I thought it would be great if you guys all chose someone today to give a holiday card to. So I'm going to hand them out, and on our way out, you can give our awesome holiday cards to anyone you want. Look how many options there are out there. Beautiful people. Okay? So come as you're coming forward, grab a card, okay? All right.
So happy holidays. That's my gift that I just received. This morning's offertory comes from Theodore Parker, who was very instrumental in helping with the abolitionist movement and was the inspiration for early Unitarians in the Zinedale Valley. So that's important to remember that connection goes all the way from the Boston area to here. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, a good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of divine living is faith. May we give freely so that our progressive work may spread. Thank you.
We have some leftover dough from 2 weeks ago we found in the corners of the church, so I'm supposed to present that. We also had an opportunity before we read, or after, before, our take on dough. And dough is, of course, a Chinese pathway in life. You couldn't really call it a religion. Some may build it into that, I suppose, and so on. And what we read as the translation of 81 verses is something that's evolved as in Gnostics or Judaism or any of the religion or philosophy entities that are, 2,500 years is a long time to keep saying the same thing. So it gets modified just a bit, and sometimes an awful lot. But I'll read to you from the 67th verse here. Some say that my teaching is nonsense. Others call it lofty, but impractical. But to those who have looked inside themselves, this nonsense makes perfect sense. And to those who put it into practice, this loftiness has roots that go deep. I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures, simple in actions and in thoughts. You return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Compassionate towards yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. The going one way and turning around at the end of the phrase the other way may seem contrary or impossible to understand. And hearing one reading really doesn't do much more than give you kind of a feel for what the Tao is, and is better stated by a book called Tao of Pooh. That's Winnie the Pooh, of course. And the How of Pooh, the Tao is of who? The Tao of Pooh, in which it's revealed that one of the world's greatest Taoist masters isn't Chinese or a venerable philosopher, but is in fact none other than the effortless, calm, still, reflective bear. A. E. Milne's Winnie the Pooh. While Eeyore frets, and Piglet hesitates, and Rabbit calculates, and Owl pontificates, Pooh just is. And that's a clue to the secret wisdom of the Taoist.
I'd like to begin the sermon, or the venturing forth part of the service, with a reading from Rabbi Michael Lerner, who is the leader and founder of Tikkun. And it's called Occupy Hanukkah and Christmas. Hanukkah, the first recorded national liberation struggle against Greek imperialism, and Christmas celebrates the birth of a hoped-for Messiah to free the Jewish people from Roman imperialism. The symbolism of a homeless couple giving birth in a manger surrounded by animals, because the more comfortable people have not been able to make room for them inside a roofed home, is akin to the symbolism of the candles lit on Hanukkah to celebrate the victory of the powerless over the powerful. Both offer a powerful reminder that both Judaism, born of slaves in Egypt, and Christianity, born of a movement of the poor and powerless, were in their times the Occupy movement that confronted the powerful and those who served them. Major forces in the Christian world have sided with the war makers, ultra-nationalists, and the blame poverty on the poor cheerleaders for vast inequalities and protection of the rich against the needs of the rest. Jews, while retaining their commitment to domestic liberalism, have become tone deaf to the cries of the oppressed in Palestine, to the huge inequalities of wealth in Israel, and have allowed their American institutions to be governed not by one person, one vote, but $1, one vote. One of the reflections of the way both religions have lost their ethical core is that the vast majority of people in both religious worlds have allowed their winter holidays to be turned into orgies of consumerism. The ethos of materialism and selfishness that is the dirty secret and driving force of global capitalism has infected the religious world almost as much as the secular. The good news is that a counter-movement of spiritual progressives has emerged in the past few decades. Spiritual progressives who are willing to challenge the distortions in their own religious communities while simultaneously doing battle with the institutions and practices of the wealthy and powerful. Spiritual progressives recognize that even those who appear most insensitive to the needs of the poor and powerless, the policies that benefit the 1% at the expense of the 99%, are themselves often quite decent people in their private lives. The rebirth through the progressive movement goes far beyond the demands for taxing the rich or providing more jobs and a rational health care system. Every political, economic, legal, and educational institution, according to Rabbi Lerner, must be rebuilt with a new bottom line that judges efficiency, productivity, and rationality based on how much they help develop in us our capacities to be loving and caring, kind and generous, ethically and ecologically sensitive, and responding with awe, wonder, and radical amazement at the grandeur of the mystery of this life. What do we give ourselves to and why? I thought this would be a pretty easy one to tackle. I haven't even gotten close. But I thought these words by Mary Oliver helped me move into the spirit of what I wanted to say or to seek out. To live in the world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go. To let it go. Yesterday, as the sun, its golden rays, was sinking below the horizons of the Flint Hills that we were wandering in with our overabundant, joyful dog, Poppy, I turned to Chuck and asked him, "What do you give yourself to and why?" And he kind of kept on walking as he does when he doesn't want to answer my question. And I said, "What do you give yourself to and why?" He says, "Well, rational non-judgment." I said, "What the hell is that?" Rational non-judgment. And then he thought, "Okay, I do not want to do harm in the world. I want to promote justice." And then he made the leap to his job as a federal public defender, where he served the least of us, many of whom never had anybody lift up the gifts that they had to bring to the world, but instead life just pushed down and down on those people. So all they had was anger. real deep anger. Nothing rational about their behavior. They were just pissed. And of course, they got into a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. And I, at first, when Chuck and I were together and he was defending people who did such heinous crimes, I couldn't even listen to them. Asked him, what are you doing? How could you? I mean, come on, please, already. This is just ridiculous. This person is crazy. And he said, first, it's about defending the Constitution. Defend the Constitution, the right of all people for fair representation, a right for happiness, a right for justice. He said, that's what I mean. I can't judge those people. Everybody has judged those people. I cannot judge them. I must be with them. And I can remember one day he came home and he had a particularly tough client who could have picked Chuck up by the neck and just snapped him. And he was in a room alone with him for a half hour working over the details of his case. He has met with this man many times. His muscles were so big that they're impossible to describe. He was like Hercules. And Chuck just worked with him week after week. And then maybe after the seventh time of visiting with him, preparing for trial, the man looked at Chuck in the eyes and said, you are the first person I have ever trusted. Do you know what it's like to be 40 years old and have never trusted another human being in your life? I can't imagine. I can't imagine what that is like. So, to not judge that person, what a thing to give yourself to. What a gift to the world. In this time of giving, in this orgy of materialism, which is almost impossible to avoid, and some of it's fun and some of it's really meaningful, it's not to be just thrown out, but it is to be balanced. Balanced with an understanding of how fortunate we are. And the good fortune we have, that stuff that we surround ourselves with, can be shared, and we have choices to make about what we give ourselves to. So as we walked a gaggle of geese, Chuck counted 22, surrounded us, and all around us, the hills were turning rosy in that deep burning brown. And we talked and we wondered about, what does it mean to give yourself to something? I looked around and the ground was wet with the recent rains. And you could just feel the sponginess of this native prairie beneath your feet as you walked in this beauty. And the geese were singing and honking across the sky. They landed in a pond not far from us where a beaver family lives. And then the prairie chickens roost. So it's just a marvelous area to walk through and to imagine all the life that you can't even see. And I thought, this is what I need to give myself to now. Instead of this wrangling with this question, take the time to be present in this beauty, in this awesome grandeur. How often do we just pass by what is so beautiful? I know I do it all the time. I'm always in a rush. I'm always 5 minutes late. I'm always like got 10 things more I should be doing. But when I settle and move into that place where everything in me connects with beauty, there There's something that calls you outside of your small and petty concerns, the spinning that you're going around about some person who said something or didn't say something or whatever it is that gets that motor going, to feel it just unwind, to settle down, and to let this incredible peace pervade you. Is something I want to give myself to more often. And I think why is obvious. What we give ourselves to can be healthy or unhealthy. A lot of people get obsessed by things that begin out as something really beautiful. When we started our bookstore in Lawrence, Kansas, and looked through 100,000 titles, and all of these book companies, wholesalers that sold books and chose 12,000 books, we were just burning the candles at both ends. We were rebuilding the store so that it looked like a place that we would want to go into and buy books and read. We had chairs, we had a fountain, we had just music that people would come and play, and we created a glorious spot. And we had this vision of creating a multicultural bridge in our community where African Americans for the first time could have a public display of their history on Main Street. And we had history nights of the gay and lesbian movement, LGBTQ movement, and we had them recorded. We did so many marvelous things, and we had great people working for us. But Barnes and Noble and Borders, they beckoned, and Amazon, that great giant, came crushing down on our dream, so that we were maxing out our credit cards to pay the bills for this dream. And then we couldn't give health insurance to certain people because we no longer had the money. And we began to feel beleaguered and so distraught by the tension and the anxiety of trying to live out a dream, something we thought, because Chuck and I just loved books. We found that books were our savior as children. It's where we could escape. It's where we could find something out about ourselves that no one else could tell us. This private, enchanted world of a book. And we wanted to share that with others because in Lawrence, Kansas at that time, there was not a bookstore that had an LGBTQ section in their bookstore. And if you asked the booksellers why not, oh, well, that's not necessary. I said, but then why do I have to go to Chicago, to San Francisco, to Boston to buy my books? And they didn't have an answer. They didn't care. So we said we need to provide books for all people. We had books for the Haskell students and all the Native Americans that lived there. We had Native American employees. We had people who were Chicano. We had an African American manager, the first one on Main Street in Lawrence, Kansas. Can you believe this? Yes, I bet you can. But anyway, we couldn't. We were trying to live out this dream, but it crushed in on us. And we found ourselves unable to breathe, unable to sleep, unable to function, because the pressures, we kept our full-time jobs. It was impossible. We had to give it up. But the good thing is, because we knew we were going to be a radical bookstore, we bought the building. And that building is now a beacon in downtown Lawrence for private individual businesses, for creative places, for creative industries to survive and to make it, as The Gap, as Starbucks, as all these chains come in and take over and move out all of the people who had been there for 30 and 40 years. We believe that we are a beacon in that town for the individual, for the small business owner. So anyway, that's one way it can flip your dream. I mean, you give yourself to it, and it just doesn't work out at all. You lose lots of money, lots of sleep, and no one likes you anymore. But I have to say, till this day, just a couple of weeks ago, I met someone who said, did you used to work at Terra Nova Books in downtown Lawrence? And I said, yeah, we did. And they said, oh, wow, that was my favorite bookstore ever. So, anyway, I guess the gift comes back in ways that you can't necessarily understand. And then another thing about giving yourself, there's this whole, you know, what are you giving yourself to? I mean, there's Hitler who really gave himself to an idea, to an ethos, to a whole way of thinking that was horrendous, horrific. It was really awful. So we know that we have to be careful about what we choose and why. And one of the ways to begin to gauge that is, is it a healthy thing for the whole world? Well, Hitler wasn't interested in that. But we should be. And we should be giving ourselves to things that allow us to see when things are really going bad and speak up and do our part to prevent another Holocaust. Goethe said, every excellent endeavor turns from within toward the world. I have great faith that we as a people in this state can wake up from this kind of long sleep and regain some kind of progressive energy. But it takes places like this fellowship and its long history of doing social action and doing good works in the community and helping at the hungry kitchen to begin to ignite that fire that will get people moving and doing and helping and being the presence that we all want to be gifted with. So, regardless of where you are, it's never too late. If you're 60, if you're 80, if you're 20, it's never too late. It's one of the notions that, you know, when you're in high school or in grammar school, you have these dreams of really doing big things. And then people find themselves in midlife and they think, oh, this is not what I wanted. This doesn't really feel that good. But I have a mortgage, I have a family, I have a blah, 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 and I got to pay for this and I got to pay for that. But if you are unhappy, if you are not giving yourself to something that feeds you and sustains you and motivates you and makes you want to get up in the morning, there's something wrong. What do you love to do? Is probably the basic question. What brings you into that zone where you forget time? Where you're not looking at the watch saying, oh, would he shut up already? Or whatever that might be. You know, we all have those moments where we think, oh, God, I just got to get out of here. I want to get onto something else. We can't be in the present moment. What are those things that engage us in such a way that we are so present that nothing else exists? Now, we know that that can't go on ad infinitum 24/7. That's probably impossible. But for people who have trained in meditation and other spiritual practices, find that those moments cluster more, that there are more connected moments where they feel that timelessness, where they feel that eagerness to be present. And as a part of knowing what you love, you have to practice discovering who you are. It's not a one-time thing. It's not something you do when you're 19 and going to college and you're taking a philosophy class and you're wondering about the meaning of life and you've been exposed to existentialism and you think, oh, there's no meaning, or there's this kind of meaning, or you just want to get high and drunk. I mean, a lot of us have been through that. We know what that's like. It's fun, but it's empty ultimately. It does not bring meaning that lasts. So what are those things in your life that bring that kind of meaning? It's a journey of discovery. And you need to keep on looking for it. And then once you begin to get a sense of that, if you haven't already, you have to begin to act on your dreams. It's not enough to have dreams. As a Unitarian Universalist, we know that it's deeds, not creeds. So if you're 90 and you haven't written that book of poetry or haven't made that painting or haven't done that thing and you still can, do it. In the newsletter, I write about Dorothea Tanning, 101. She's the oldest emerging poet. She's just published her second edition of poetry by Milkweed Press, which is a great press. She was a sculptor. She was a painter. She was married to Max Ernst, 101, and she's writing, and she's going to public poetry readings, and she's just living fully. Now, we probably all don't have the kind of genes that allow her to do that, but if you do, even if you don't, you can still do something that brings passion into your life. I don't care how old you are or how young. Isn't this the essence of religion? To bring out meaning so that we can share it with one another, to be bound by that joyous creation that comes out of us as individuals and community? What a great thing. Everyone probably has heard that phrase from Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss. Well, it's kind of hackneyed and glib now, but it's not really. What brings you bliss? What brings you into those moments when you know yourself fully, completely, without question? What are those times? Who are those people that bring us into that wondrous place where we sense the awe and the grandeur, where we can celebrate the gift of children, grandchildren, our elders? What do you give yourself to? Why? That's an open question for sharing. What do you give yourself to and why? Or it can be rephrased, what would you like to give yourself and why aren't you doing it? Or I have tried giving myself to this and this is what happened. Or whatever you'd like to make of that question. I could go back to more stuff.
Well, I'm starting up a vegan group. I'm trying to get myself to veganism by just starting out slow, so I'm trying to get myself to that. But, of course, it's slow going. I also like anime, and I want to do a podcast, but I haven't done it yet. So, but, yeah, I'd like to give myself more fully to things that I feel passionate about. So, but, anyway, yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
I know that we've had people who are chemists who became librarians, and we have had people who have opened photography studios. We have people who have moved to the West Coast to pursue dreams. So I know that there are many dreams that are very much alive in this room.
Jim Chanteau. Before Doreen died, she asked me on a number of occasions what I was going to do when I retired. What I was going to do, okay. What I was going to do, it's working, okay. What I was going to do when I retired. As a model, she was amazing. When she retired, she did everything. She was on board. She was working. I mean, she worked here with the UUs. She was president of the library, or Friends of the Library board. She was on the county health board, I think it was. But she had a saying, and I think it's apropos of what you're saying, Michael. But it points out kind of a different orientation. She said most women retire to do something. Men retire from doing something. And she said that was my challenge. Even, you know, she knew she wasn't going to be living much longer. And she said, before you retire, you're going to have to figure out what it is you're going to be retiring to do, not just retiring from. And I'll be retiring next May, and I'm still working on it.
There have been some studies done that associate the happiness quotient with if you belong to a religious community or not. And there are some studies that show belonging to a religious community or across a number of kinds of tests, and I can't remember the names of them all, but that it shows that if you do, you have a better chance of being happy. And I think that's because you're connected to something that asks you to find meaning in your life. No matter what religion it is, hopefully it's asking that. So anyway, there's a Anne.
I am retired and stay very busy, but I found that what keeps me busy, and I guess because I spend so much time at it, maybe I'm passionate about it, but I fell into these things. I never made the decision or thought about it. I just sort of accidentally attended something and got caught. And so I never really thought about it. And then once you get so caught, maybe maybe I should think about it. Maybe I'm not doing the thing I'm passionate about. Maybe I should drop all this and and think about this. I never thought about it.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I know some of you, but not others. My dad, Tom, and I are kind of new as members at UU, but we've been around a while. And I wanted to say that this year I've had a chance to experience really giving myself to my family. And that might not sound unusual for a woman, because we have all these sort of ideas about womanhood, but I have a really demanding career, and I have to say it's often come first. This year, I've had a chance to open my life to having my dad here in Manhattan with us. So in addition to our kids, we now have our elder, and it's made a huge difference in my happiness. I'm glad I've been able to give myself to it.
Michael, you're egging me on. Well, I know you guys have all probably heard my story a million times, but you know, I used to work as a construction manager, and that was not me. And I wasn't happy, but I couldn't seem to leave it because I made good money and I had a good title and all these things. But you know, when my second child was born, I just seemed natural that I should give myself to my children, but I was kind of reluctant because I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom like my mom was. That wasn't my aspiration, but I did it, and I didn't love every minute of it. I don't like laundry and dishes and things like that, but I did it, and what I found was once I started giving myself to it, I found that I started noticing, you know, little beauties in my world and that I didn't really notice before, and a lot of it was in my children, and so I started photographing that, and I think that's what led to other people noticing what I was doing, and it kind of was a natural transition into becoming a photographer. But I find now that I'm happiest when I'm photographing those happy accidents, and I'm trying to keep balance with that, but you know, the clients that want things a certain way, that's not really what I love. I love just kind of photographing what's happening. And I had a session recently where I invited people to come out to Marlatt Park, and we had a couch and a Volkswagen bus in a field and all this kind of stuff. And it was this beautiful Mary scene and everything. And I didn't have any clients that wanted to do it, so my friends just showed up. And it ended up being so beautiful. And I just felt like I was definitely in a zone. And it was kind of, I don't know, it showed me that I'm really doing the right thing.
Anybody else like to share something? All right. Thank you very much for sharing. And let us now stand if you are able. And if not, you can sing sitting even if you are able. And let us sing the closing hymn number 225, O Come Emmanuel. The hidden message of Hanukkah and Christmas: don't be realistic, but transform reality in accord with your most loving vision for our world.